there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Many Old Testament Bible passages mention a race of giants on the earth. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Numbers chapter 13, verse 33. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. Deuteronomy 2, verse 11. They were also regarded as giants. Deuteronomy 2, verse 20. That was also regarded as the land of giants. Giants formerly dwelt there. Deuteronomy chapter 3, where only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. And so forth, there are many other scriptures that refer to the giants. Well, despite the numerous biblical references to giants, few modern-day Christians know anything about the subject. Two of my longtime friends are here today to discuss the subject in detail. Dr. Tom Horn is a successful author of numerous best-selling books. He's also the founder and co-host of Skywatch TV. Tom, welcome back to True News.
Hey, great to be back on the air with you again, Rick.
Yes, sir. It's been a while, but we're glad to have you here. And joining Tom is Steve Quayle. Steve hosted a daily radio talk show for several decades. He's also the author of numerous books about ancient subjects, including Genesis 6 giants. Steve, welcome back to True News.
Well, thank you, Rick. And it's like we get to today, the three of us get to talk about the headlines of the day. And the day is genetic manipulation. And what's fascinating is that all the myths and legends talk about the times now that we're coming into. And for the people that don't know, Tom and I independently, but directed by the same Holy Spirit, have been conducting our parallel research over decades. And what's fascinating today, Rick, we get to come on with you and share just the times that we're in, because we're talking about the days of Noah. Jesus warned us about these days, that just as in the days of Noah, so would the days be leading up to the coming of the Son of Man. So when we're talking about giants, we're talking about the merging, the pollution of the human genome by the fallen angels trying to make the promise that in the Old Testament, Genesis 3:15, and the seed of the Redeemer that would come, they're trying to nullify that and destroy all mankind with all of their technological shenanigans, all of their genetic manipulation, and all of their basically slander against the Christians and slander against the people who believe in the God of the Old Testament. And Tom, Tom's got some of the most fascinating stories to talk about, and actually events, because he's literally been to Mount Graham, where the Vatican has their observatory, and people have heard it's called Lucifer. That's an acronym, but they know exactly what they're looking for. And we just interviewed Tom for the newest episode of True Legends, the series, and the subtitle of that has always been, "They Who Control the Past Determine the Future." And Tom, will you share wherever you feel led? May I just, Rick, turn it over to him so he can share with you just the astonishing preparation of planet Earth for an alien savior, just exactly what the book of Daniel talks about.
All right, go for it, Tom.
Well, I didn't know that was going to happen, but yay. Rick, as you know, because you interviewed me it's probably been about 3 years ago now when we first went up to Mount Graham on this subject matter, where we had made this prediction that Pope Benedict was going to step down, Benedict the 16th. And, you know, at first, people all around the world were laughing at us. They were saying, popes don't step down, they don't resign, they die in office, it's never going to happen. But we had our reasons, and we talked all about that back then, for making the prediction that Pope Benedict would not only step down, we said exactly the year and the month that he would step down. We said it would be in April of 2012. And when that date passed, and the Vatican, Benedict, nobody had made any kind of a formal declaration of his resignation, you know, I thought, uh-oh, well, maybe we missed it, but we sure had a lot of confidence in it. And then, of course, February 28, 2013, the Vatican makes the announcement that Pope Benedict has resigned, and the same day they give an interview. Their El Observatore Romano, their official media outlet, gives an interview with the New York Times in which they admit that Pope Benedict the 16th had actually officially resigned in 2012 when he returned from a trip at the end of March, made it official internally and only to a handful of select members of the Curia, the Roman government, in April 2012. Well, when they made that announcement, I got to tell you, my phone line lit up. People all over the world, including from Rome, wanting to know who our insider at the Vatican was. And Rick, I told him, I said, if I had told them it was the Holy Spirit, that would have really confused them, right? They totally would not have got it. But it was while we were on the radio talking with you, Rick, and many others about this resignation of Benedict that people all over the world started emailing, and when these were talk shows where people could call in and ask questions, they started saying, yeah, but what do you make of the Vatican being out there now saying so much about aliens? Because you guys might remember that in 2009, 10, 11, 12, the official astronomers and spokespersons for the Vatican, they were out there talking about how they wanted to baptize aliens. And then they ratcheted it up and said, not only is it okay to believe in life on other planets, but to not believe in the possibility of life on other planets, that would be the heresy, because that would put limits on God's creative ability. And so you had Jose Funes Jr., who at that time was the head of the Vatican Observatory Research Group. You had Guy Consolmagno, who's now the new head of the Vatican Observatory Research Group. And Guy Consolmagno actually gave me 5 interviews with him via the Internet from Rome when we went up to Mount Graham. So what am I saying? We've been on this quest now for 4 solid years, but it was after we went to Mount Graham in Arizona to try to get an answer, a legitimate answer, for why the Vatican was so heavily invested in the study of deep space. And was there really anything to what Father Malachi Martin had said years earlier on Coast to Coast AM when he said the Vatican's up there because they know there is something that is approaching the earth and it's going to be of the utmost importance in coming years? We really wanted to get behind all of that. But we did not know when we went up there there would be a connection to the Nephilim, to the giants, to the subject matter of this interview that we're doing today. Because we went up there, we were given full access. I don't want to go back and repeat all that information from our interview earlier. I don't know if you have an archive. If people want to go back, maybe they can listen to those interviews we did then. We did see the Lucifer device. We were told everything that we wanted to know. But it was once we came down off of Mount Graham, I was on another, well, I think I was on with Jim Baker or Sid Roth, one of those guys, and I said something. I said the reason that the Apache Indian, in particular, but other indigenous peoples, had joined environmentalists in Arizona in a lawsuit to try to stop the Vatican and NASA and Arizona State University from building that observatory on the top of Mount Graham, the reason they joined them was because they were there ahead of everybody else, and their forefathers and foremothers had lived and died on Mount Graham. And therefore, it was something like a graveyard. It was holy ground, and they didn't want people up there with machines disturbing the mountain. I said that on television. Excuse me, I've had a cold for a while. And I was immediately contacted by a member of the Apache Nation. And here's what he wanted me to know. He wanted me to know that while what I had said was okay, good enough, that was not the point. the reason that the Apache had sued the Vatican and NASA to stop them from going up onto the top of that mountain was because Mount Graham is, in their worldview, one of the four holiest mountains in all of the world. Now, we've vetted that, and that's not only true for the Apache, it's true for all American indigenous people. Mount Graham's one of the four holiest mountains in all the world, and it is because it is what we would call, in our modern lingo, a stargate, a doorway, a portal, a specific geographic location on Earth through which entities have entered into and exited from Earth's three-dimensional reality since the dawn of time. Well, when we learned that, I got to tell you, the conspiracy meter went off the Richter scale in my head about why now that mountain of all mountains became the place that the Vatican was willing to face a federal lawsuit in order to get on top of that mountain. You know, why not just move to another mountain? And but the other part of the story here is that when Moses was writing the Pentateuch, the very verse that you quoted a moment ago, Rick, Genesis 6:4, there were giants in the earth in those days and also after that, while he was writing that in the Middle East, at the very exact same time, the Anasazi Indians in America were drawing petroglyphs on the walls in the four corners of the United States and below the base of Mount Graham that told exactly the same story. A story of a portal opening, giants coming through, six fingers, six toes, cannibalizing the American people, and they begin crying out to the great God of heaven who sends a universal flood. This is all early American history. Sends a universal flood, washes the bones of the giants up under the mounds of the hills. But it was a tremendous corroboration of the stories of the Old Testament. That, in other words, people who had no method, no known method for communicating with one another at the same time in history, were writing down the same story on opposite sides of the earth, and it involved these giants, the watchers, the fallen Nephilim, and so on.
Well, Rick, what's interesting, what Tom just shared, parallel to that, the fascinating thing is that when Jesus spoke in Matthew 16, 18, and I say also unto thee, thou art Peter, and upon this rock, the rock of faith, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The thing that people don't understand is that giants were designed by Lucifer through the fallen angels, through the sexual corruption of the fallen angels and the earth women. But the point I want to make is this. Well, Tom is hearing these Native American legends and writing about it and incorporating into his DVDs. I'm basically sending a team to Peru, and I'm sending them to to do our True Legends of series. What's fascinating, in 2005, I was on Coast to Coast talking about giants, because that was the first edition of my book, Genesis 6 Giants, or around that time, and I get contacted from an airman who's in Afghanistan, and he tells me the story of how a giant that was in a rather large cavern, well, we were fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan, he was, we sent out teams to try and track them down, but they encountered a giant who basically, and I'm talking about a live giant in the 21st century, that basically killed the advanced scouting team and required a special forces and a special operations team to come in and get this giant, kill him. Well, they killed him, and they take him down to the Bagram Air Force Base, and my friend was a pilot, and my friend flew him out. He's now become my friend, but at that time, he said, up until the time they flew out, he was flying in and out of Afghanistan for the military. He said he used to think I was crazy until they brought a giant red-haired, literally a giant who was red-haired, smelled horrifically, unlike anything they'd ever smelled in their life, six fingers, six toes, and he put his foot up against the giant's foot, and the giant's foot was somewhere around four to six times his foot. Now, this is interesting. So 2005, this happens. Now, fast forward a couple years ago, and this is where it ties in with what Tom's talking about. This same pilot is in a bar in New Mexico, and a Navajo elder comes up. And the Navajo elder starts singing and, doing his kind of like song chant that the Navajos are famous for. And the medicine man, a gray-haired individual, he stops. He looks at my friend, and the pilot, that's who I refer to him as, and he looks at him and says, "You have seen giants. The earth has swallowed up the giants. The giants are coming back." My friend, the pilot, had never met him. He had never talked to anybody because he didn't want people to think he was crazy. So then we're in the desert southwest. Tom's in the desert southwest. We are there. He's literally there. We're there in the interview. And what's fascinating, we fast forward to Rome. My film crew was over there a couple months ago, Tim Alberino and the cameraman and everything else that went into that. And they're meeting with, you're not kidding you, they're having secret meetings in the dark streets of Rome. And the subject of giants comes up and how much the Vatican has covered up about it. Now, why is this critical? Because the secret governments that rule the world are very aware of these beings' entities. Many of them are still in stasis, and that means obviously they're in a form of suspended animation. Fast forward to just a couple months ago now, and obviously we're talking 2016, and we see the Pope, we see the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill, and Obama all meeting in the area of Patagonia / the Antarctica. The Patriarch Kirill goes to supposedly Antarctica to open up the first Russian Orthodox Church there, which is really not the exact purpose of the mission. Now we come to the point where Antarctica is in the news. The whole planet, the Russians, Chinese, everybody seems to be headed towards the Antarctic. Prior to that, there were rumors out there that the U.S. military base deep underground that basically the Nazis have occupied since 1947 had done tunneling, massive tunneling from Antarctica under the ocean into South America. Now, why that's critical is when we started our documentary in Peru, the great Peruvian tunnels, which were known to the Catholic Church, were called the Chincana. Now, I don't speak Spanish very well, but I've learned how to pronounce that. And what's more fascinating than anything, and why this is critical, is the architecture under these tunnels was built by giants with technology that did not exist at the time of the Aztec, Inca, or Mayan Empire. Obviously, in Peru, it's the Incans. So we get one of the most famous guys. This all has to do with giants, but it also has to do, Rick, with your vision. And I want you to share that when I'm done in just a minute of saying this. We talked to different eyewitnesses in Peru. And now this will blow your mind. As I'm talking about this on the radio, I get a call and an email from a gentleman whose great-great-grandfather was responsible for hiding Hitler, Adolf Hitler, in a Peruvian underground citadel. If people do their homework, obviously read my book, Empire Beneath the Ice, they will find out that Hitler was obsessed with civilizations in the earth, under the earth, and basically the tunneling of them. The Aztec, Inca, and Mayans possessed no metal implements outside of gold, silver, and the precious metals they fashioned into jewelry. So therefore, all three of those empires, now we're talking about a very strange occult phenomenon here, all claimed that they were built by the giants who came from the east, who would also return. And obviously, you know, when Cortez and all the conquistadores showed up, well, they think this is a prophecy being fulfilled. Now, why is this critical? One of the toughest things for people to accept in the Old Testament, and this is a marvelous, marvelous basic understanding, is when God told the children of Israel when they're going in the land of Canaan to kill every man, woman, and child. I personally, in all the years I've been witnessing, Rick, for 44 years to people, they invariably bring that up to me if they're familiar with the story. And they'll say to me, what kind of a loving God is that? And my answer is simply this. He who created mankind in his image and likeness was not about to allow the perversion or the destruction of his genetic plan for mankind. So now, everything that Tom writes about, I've written about genetic Armageddon, everything out there is to destroy mankind. And so what I find most fascinating is the overlap between Tom and I, our mutual investigations, our mutual film projects. Now, saying that is, we have a secret meeting in Rome. It's set up, okay? And it's set up, what's the chance that my film director gets to go to the Jesuit headquarters under a lot of security and scrutiny, and the gentleman that he's interviewing talks about the Pope having a secret meeting on Mount Graham and meeting with someone who came through the gate. Now, people try and dismiss Tom or me or you. You know this. Our critics look for anything, but we're in the Vatican headquarters interviewing a man who's very much a part of trying to expose what's going on and the plans for the alien deception. And lo and behold, he tells us and sets up a meeting with a very wealthy billionaire in Italy who said, do you know who basically funded Zachariah Sitchin and his works? Now, I've read all of Sitchin's works, okay? I agree with so many of his findings, not his conclusions. But the point is it comes right back to the true history of the world, the biblical history. And a lot of people say this, that this isn't relevant to Christians. Oh, it's the most relevant, because Jesus said there's never been a time like it, nor would be again. And except the days be shortened for the elect's sake, there'd be no flesh left alive. Now, Rick, I know you've shared with me before, but I think in tying this together, will you share what the Lord showed you? I don't know if you've ever heard this, Tom, but it's remarkable.
Yeah, I will, but I can't let you not answer a couple questions here. Who funded?
Okay, yeah, no. I just think it's amazing because
I will. But who funded Zechariah Sitchin's work?
A very wealthy billionaire under the orders of the Vatican.
All right, and then you said that the Pope had a secret meeting at Mount Graham with a person or an entity that came through the gate. Obviously, you're not referring to the parking gate.
Well, obviously, I'm not referring to a toll gate, a parking gate, a sheep gate, a goat gate, and I'm not even referring to Watergate. I'm talking about a dimensional portal, that Tom calls a stargate. And obviously, the word star in Hebrew and in Greek, messenger, we're talking about the Pope met with, let's just call this, an entity that came through the gate.
Well, and by the way, I don't know if I've ever even told you this, Steve, but I negotiated this through Arizona State University. So that people know, you don't just get in a car and drive to the top of Mount Graham and jump out and say, we're here to meet the Pope. You know, way down off that mountain, there are very tall fences, and they are electrified. And they've got big notifications on them in multiple languages talking about all the horrible things they're going to do to you if you try to climb over that fence to get up to the top of that mountain. You absolutely cannot get up there. And there is a constant 24-hour-a-day police presence up there. They will arrest you and take you straight to jail. And even when you get to the top of Mount Graham, the only walkways you can be on have little cables, steel cables, that run alongside them with signs saying, do not step off the trail. You can't even step off the trail and walk into the forest. So they are really guarded about everything that goes on up there. But the day that we went to the top of Mount Graham, halfway up the hill, there's an old campground that had been built during the Roosevelt era when the New Deal, and they were creating jobs for people that were survivors of the Great Depression. And so we stopped there to have lunch. And while we were in there, the guy that works for the Parks Department that attends that facility, he had a little fire going in the fireplace, and we're just having a general conversation. Well, when he found out we were actually going to the top of Mount Graham, we had a guide from ASU that was going to get us there. He got really quiet, and he looked at us, and he said, are you going up there because the Pope was up there the other day? And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, when they brought him in by helicopter, And we didn't know anything about what he was even talking about, and so then he just let it go. And we didn't make nothing about it. We didn't include it in our book, Ex Vaticana. We didn't say a thing about it. But you didn't know that, Steve, that you know, this guy that works for the State Parks Department, he had asked us that very question in actually very early 2012 when we were finishing our research, that the Pope had been up there on the top of the mountain. Now, that's something later on, by the way, that it was either the Phoenix Gazette or the Arizona Republic, one of those had a little short article in which they referred to the Pope being up there. Something you said a moment ago, I'd love to just add one thing to before Rick tells us his story, if I can.
Please.
You said that, you know, people question this whole idea about why would you be talking about the giants and the watchers that came down in the ancient days. Look, I will go out on a limb here and tell you that I do not believe that you can understand the Old Testament, period. You cannot understand the Old Testament if you don't understand the story of the watchers coming down. You go to Psalms 82, and here's God sitting, standing among what it calls among the council of the gods. Read that in the King James Version. You don't even understand what's going on when he divided the nations. He put lesser divine beings, angels, watchers, over the 70 nations of the earth who then later became rebellious. They wanted to be worshipped. What happened with the story of the watchers when they came down is, you know, people say they wanted to cut off the birth line of the Messiah. I think that's partly maybe true, but that's just such a small part. What they literally wanted to do, if you understand the story, is they wanted to take dominion over the earth away from God and through the introduction of a different kind of human-like mutation, a human-like species. That's literally the full story. If you understand the complete story, you understand this was a full-on affront against God. And in the Hebrew, there is a term called harim, which refers to all of the offspring of the watchers, the Nephilim, the Anakim, the Samsonim. And this word harim means those who are dedicated to destruction. Think of them as literally the first ISIS of the early world, who were dedicated to wiping out anything that wasn't part of them. And if you understand what's going on there, then you understand why God tells Moses and Joshua and all of his other champions that they are to be in perpetual war against those who are dedicated to harim. This is the reason why when they go into Canaan, they go into the Promised Land, Joshua comes down off the mountain, comes back up onto the mountain, he says, we are more than able to take it. You know, you quoted a scripture a moment ago, Rick, that says, we were as grasshoppers in the eyes of our enemy, and so we were in their eyes. That was the evil report. But Joshua and Caleb said, let's go up at once and take it because we're more than able. This is a little tiny reflection of an eternal conflict that God's chosen people, the Hebrews, were to be in against those who were harim, those who were dedicated to the destruction of the divine order. That's why they set about to change all of the genetic makeup, not just of man, but of beast. Genesis makes it very clear that God sent the flood because all flesh, both man and beast, had been corrupted. This was an assault on God's divine order. It was an assault against God. It was an attempt to literally take dominion over the earth away from God and to wipe out everything that God had made. Now, once you understand what was going on, then when you read the Old Testament and you read those passages where these people are, you know, where Saul sins against God because he refuses to wipe out entire populations of people, you understand. It's not because he's this genocidal, jealous maniac. It's because there was a corruption of the bloodline, and in order to preserve humanity and to save mankind, which God had made in his image, to save those who were made in the image of God, they had to wipe out those who intended to take dominion from God with a new form of polluted humanity.
Tom, if they had succeeded, then they would have interrupted the virgin birth of Jesus Christ. Mary would have been corrupted.
They would have done that too, but my point is that is only one piece of a much bigger and more complex issue, but that is part of it, certainly.
And let me step into this real, because I think it's the major, but the corruption, because if you go to the book of Genesis, everything that God created, the scripture says, and he saw that it was good.
Right.
Every barrier that God created in Genesis and the forbidding of cross-species breeding, etc. You know, everything was after its kind. You know, one of the most fascinating, Rick, legends out there is about how the fallen angels, the Watchers, you know, had even intercourse with beasts, especially a bull. Now, it's fascinating that that's one of the first acts of bestiality that I've been able to find in, you know, 40-some years of research. But what's even more important than that is now we've got the temples of Moloch coming into the United States, and we've got the, if you will, the golden calf that Aaron formulated when Moses was on the mountain. We've got the golden bull of Wall Street, and somebody said, well, that's a lot of bull. But you don't understand that the genetic manipulation is taking place now. Tom and I started talking about this, what, Tom, 15 years ago?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a long time. And when we started talking about this, people thought, like, you know, what planet are these guys from? And we're saying, no, we're trying to tell you what planet those who came to destroy humanity. So I believe that the single most, and again, we can maybe have our take on it, but the point is that the promised seed in Genesis 3:15, because there's two instances in the of the word Nephilim, okay? And you read them both in Genesis 6, 4, and also in Numbers 13:33. Now notice the 13:33 is interesting. Once before the flood and after the flood, because people say, well, where are the giants? Prior to the flood of Noah, they were big. I mean, really big. There were the Cyclopeans that were sometimes 90 and 100 feet tall. The Colossus of Rhodes. And what most people don't understand, three of the emperors of Rome were 9 feet. Maximinus is one of them. They can go on my website, Genesis6Giants.com, and look at the illustrations. They can even look it up on Wikipedia. But saying all that, the point that we're trying to make to everyone is now, Jesus said, it was be just as in the days of Noah. We're outside of, what, eight human beings? And when perfect generations mean out of all the population planet, they can fight over how many people are alive at that time. But that's all who are genetically not tampered with. When people have dreams and visions and encounters with what I wrote the book Little Creatures about, every single thing on the earth was corrupted. It doesn't matter if there's 800,000 species of insects, I'm just making this up, by the way, or 2 million, 2 billion, doesn't matter. Everything was corrupted. And now what we've got is we've got the substitutionary plan to basically reanimate the seed of the Nephilim. And let me make a distinction here, Rick. I think you were calling them the Harim. The 33 times in the Old Testament, the Valley of the Rapha or the Rephaim, R-E-P-H-A-I-M, that word Rephaim is always applied to the progeny, the giants, or the Giborim, and all of the names that end up in I-M were either the descendants of the giants or the actual giants themselves, in this case, the Giborim. What we're talking about is when the Human Genome Project was postulated, I said, they're not looking for the human genome. They're not looking for traits. They're looking for the leftover traits of the, if you will, genetic material left over from the fallen angels merging with the earth women and producing giants. In essence, they wanted their offspring back too. And so when Jesus talked about the demons going out and walking in dark places, imagine this. Imagine a group of people, and I believe that we will prove this, or at least give enough evidence for people to say, you know, there's more here than there isn't here, that the goal has always been to reanimate those bodies that the evil spirits left, because even the demons, they cried out and said to Jesus, have you come to torment us before our time? So when they were sent into the abyss, some of the most dark and ritualistic endeavors have been into the Mariana Trench to loosen and to release many of these entities that were bound up. So when you see the word the dead, you need to go to a concordance, because the dead, it literally means the Rapha or the Rephaim. Shall the dead rise to praise thee? Now fast forward right now into our time. What Tom and Chris Putnam were able to get to the bottom line, and I love that statement, beyond all the research, you come to the bottom line. They are preparing the world for the return of the Antichrist, for the return of, what do you want to call them, the lizard people. And when Tom was explained the Vatican's description of who's coming back to claim authority over the world. Remember, Jesus said the whole world lies in the evil one. I mean, there's no, Jesus couldn't have been tempted because Jesus didn't say, you're a liar, devil. He rebuked the devil based on the word of God. So we're right now fast forwarding into the most precipitous and perilous times and dangerous times, because imagine the appetite. I think I've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, outside of children's derivations, that with maybe two exceptions that I can find, all of the giants turned to cannibalism. And what's fascinating is when the Pope, when all the, Kirill, Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, and Obama and others are in Patagonia, they're in the land of what's called the big-footed giants. That's what Patagonia means, big feet. So when, again, I think that it's critical that people understand, this isn't nonsense, this isn't heresy, it's the, and I stand with Tom Horn's statement, you cannot understand the Old Testament leading into the New. Jesus said, lo, I come in the volume of the books that is written of me to do thy will, unless you understand the nature of conflict. And that, Rick, is what I'm going to be doing with you on Praiser, and I talk about it with Tom when I'm on Skywatch. God's people have got to understand spiritual warfare goes beyond a migraine headache or an errant brother. We're fighting against things that have been largely invisible that are now becoming visible. The biggest scientific experiment in the history of mankind, CERN and the sub-versions of CERN, isn't it fascinating that the number one theme of that is obviously Shiva, the destroyer of worlds and cosmic recreation. Let me make it clear. You couldn't have a better poster fallen angel, and I believe there's definitely a demon is a disembodied spirit. A fallen angel is that which followed Lucifer out of heaven, and I believe they control the world behind the scenes. That's the only way you can see such relevant evil. But the idea is this, that the biggest money in the world is pouring into CERN. Isn't it fascinating, the God particle? That's what, you know, it's named, Higgs boson, obviously. But even today, I got an email from somebody talking about blowing up the trace patterns of all of the particle photographs or digital images and seeing all the faces there. And Rick, I was contacted a couple of years ago, I think, through a third party. They said these scientists at CERN listen to you. They can't. They would be scared to contact you. And that's when they started seeing entities at the end of the chamber. And I think that people have got to understand CERN. God said to us, one of the most important gifts of the Holy Spirit is discernment. And I find it fascinating. It's not a play on words. It's an incorporation. And even though CERN is the acronym for, you know, the group behind it, they are literally trying to define the God particle. I believe they're trying to build a weapon that they believe that they can make war against God. Because what Tom's talking about, just as in the beginning, they are coming to make a greater war. And Jesus said there's never been a time like it, nor would be again. So that means it's even transcends and goes beyond what's happened in history. And except the days be short, and there be no flesh left alive, yet for the elect's sake.
And if I can, Steve, at some point, though, I would like to say another additional thing about what happened at Mount Graham and the American Indians and why we pursued seeking their knowledge, because a lot of people might think of that and say, well, who cares what American Indians think? I mean, it's what? It's just a bunch of New Age psychobabble. Who cares what they think? And what does that have to do with the Bible? But we found there really was a very strong connection.
Go ahead.
Well, just only that when we came off the mountain and we learned from the Apache that they have this, their oldest history involves a story that sounds like it was taken out of the Old Testament. The great God created everything good on the earth, then a portal opened, a fallen reptilian deceiver, and when you see their ancient petroglyphs, which were written at the same time as the Old Testament was written, they show a reptilian with a halo around his head coming through a doorway in the Four Corners. He teaches the American Indians to practice witchcraft. And by the way, I went to the Four Corners, met with one of the academics from the Navajo Nation, Dr. Don Mose. He's a third-generation medicine man and an academic, very sympathetic to Christians. However, he's got a lot of Christian friends. I actually got my meeting set up with him through an American missionary to the American Indians. But he told us in the native tongue. He allowed me to interview him for 3 hours about the oldest stories of American history, and what happened to the Anasazi, whose name can actually be translated an ancient alien enemy, and why they left and departed their cliff dwellings there in the Four Corners. He explained their petroglyphs to me and this story of the great creator who made everything beautiful, everything wonderful. Then the doorway opened, this reptilian deceiver comes through, which was basically a seraphim, a fallen, flying seraphim. If you read the Dead Sea Scrolls, by the way, it describes the leader of the Watchers who came down and created these giants that we're talking about today, and it actually names him Makarisha, but it describes him as being very reptilian, very dark in appearance, with snake-like appearance, a very scary look upon. Well, that's exactly what is depicted in the American Indian petroglyphs. And as soon as this doorway opens, how'd the doorway open, by the way? Both the petroglyphs explain it, and Dr. Don Mose explains that this deceiver came through, and he began teaching the Indians to practice pharmakia, sorcery, magic, mind-expanding drugs in their underground kivas for the purposes of circumventing God, in order to open doorways to entities that were beyond a veil. And so this is exactly what the book of Revelation chapter 9 talks about, when the doorways of the earth are open. In Revelation 9 it describes the angels that abound in the great river Euphrates coming up to the surface of the earth. It also describes a mighty angel that comes down and opens the bottomless pit, and up out of the earth come through these gateways, these doorways, these transgenic beings that are going to torture humanity. But those who are seeking them, it says at the end of Revelation 9, and yet they repented not of their sorcery, their pharmakia, their efforts to open a doorway into the underworld. Well, Dr. Mose, the petroglyphs, all explain that that's what the American Indians were doing. They were trying to open doorways to the underworld, and when those doorways opened, giants literally erupted up from out of the underworld to the surface of the earth. As Steve said a moment ago, they became cannibalistic. So it was very supportive. But again, besides being corroborative of the Old Testament story, the thing that was in my mind and Chris Putnam's mind when we were writing Exo Vaticana, that book that came out based on that visit to Mount Graham, the thing that was in our mind was, are we going to take heat from the Christian community? Are they going to be saying, well, why do you bother, you know, trying to interpret or translate anything based on what some, you know, American Indians might say, for crying out loud? And so the first thing we wanted to do was verify whether or not there was any biblical precedent for this idea that there are strategic locations on the earth, which is what they were telling us Mount Graham is, a doorway. Is that a biblical idea? And once we started looking into the scripture, we realized that from the Old Testament to the New, you cannot escape this idea, whether it was Genesis 28, Jacob's ladder, a very strategic location where he sees a spiral vortex, or the King James Version calls it a stairway, others call it a spiral stairway, but this area where these angels are ascending and descending to the earth. Genesis 10:8, Cush begets Nimrod. Nimrod began to be a Gibborim, and then immediately he goes to Genesis chapter 11, to the plains of Shinar, a very specific location where he's going to build a tower whose top will do what? Reach into Shamayim, the dwelling place of God. So we started noticing from the Old Testament and then over to the New, Jesus saying, from henceforth you will see the windows of heaven open and angels ascending and descending. That this idea that there are places on the earth and there are people who are associated with strategic locations on which these doorways, these gateways, open up. Mount Sinai. If Moses is going to meet with God, what does he got to do? He's got to go to the top of Mount Sinai, and there he will meet with God. When Jesus comes back, what does it say? His feet will touch the top of the Mount of Olives, and from there he will descend down into the Mountain of the Plains. Mount Hermon is the location in the Book of Enoch, which used to be part of the canon of Scripture. It's not today. Almost all of the early church fathers quoted it as canon, but I'm not going to make an argument about that. But the Book of Enoch says that it was in the days of Jared that these watchers descended down onto Mount Hermon. So what am I saying? There is this idea that mountainous locations are often located, are often identified in the Bible as places where entities move in and out of Earth's reality. Oh, and by the way, Mount Hermon is where Jesus is years later with his disciples. So get this image in your mind, because here, once again, I said you can't understand the Old Testament unless you understand what the watchers were doing in terms of challenging God. They were going to cut off the birth line of the Messiah, but they were also going to take dominion away from God over the earth. So here's Jesus, and he comes into Caesarea Philippi, which is at the base of Mount Hermon. The base of Mount Hermon was believed by the Hebrews to be the gateway to the underworld, the gateway to Sheol Hades. That's what the Lord's disciples would have believed. And that's right, by the way, that's also Deuteronomy 3, when you mention Og, the king of Bashan. Bashan is right there, where it is believed to have been the gateway to the underworld. But what does Jesus do? He meets with his disciples at the base of Caesarea Philippi, and he says, the gates of hell will not prevail against my church. He is literally sending a signal to the watchers. He is sending a signal to the fallen angels and to the spirits that are bound in the underworld, that though they tried to cut off the birth line leading to him, Matthew, the entire first part of the book of Matthew establishes the priesthood of Jesus, the pure bloodline of Jesus that is both Abrahamic, he come through Abram, also Davidic, the covenant of David, and so the King of Kings and Lord of Lords is here. When he says the gates of hell, he's being literal, the literal opening into the underworld. This will not prevail against my church. What the watchers tried to do, this is not going to prevail against my church. By the way, continue reading that story. What does it say? Within 3 days, he goes with his disciples up onto the top of a mountain. Well, guess what? The only mountain that's within a three-day walk of Caesarea Philippi is Mount Hermon, the literal mountain upon which the watchers descended in the days of Jared, and that was believed in history to be the gateway to the underworld and a forbidden place. He goes up onto that mountain, and he is transfigured. Only a short distance later, He is crucified, and what does it say? He goes into the underworld, what does it say? To preach to the spirits in prison. Now, this is not the people that are in paradise, that are in Abram's bosom. He's preaching to the spirits that are in prison. These are the renegade offspring of the watchers that were bound in the underworld that tried to cut off the birth line of the Messiah. He literally goes down there and says, sorry, boys, you failed. I'm here. And then what does it say? When he comes up from out of the underworld, he brings with him the keys to death, hell, and the grave. This is why I say that if you understand the story of the watchers and what they were trying to do, it'll totally bring the Old Testament alive to you. But the point was, I'm sorry I started preaching there. The point was, we wanted to verify.
That was good preaching, Tom. Keep going.
That there are mountainous locations identified as places where entities, both good and evil, move in and out of Earth's reality, that this is something that was biblical. And so a huge part of the book that we wrote called On the Path of the Immortals was verifying this one fact, because we knew that there would be everything from, you know, entry-level Christians to Bible scholars who would be asking this question, why are you even taking time to talk to these Native Americans? What in the world does that have to do with the world? And what we learned was they were saying something from their own worldview that had been paganized, but it corroborated this Old Testament premise that indeed there was a global historic event, and people around the world verified it. I mean, as far back as the beginning of time, from Egypt to Persia, from Rome and Greece, Assyria, Babylonia, Samaria, they were all telling the same story that Moses is telling, that you quoted at the introduction of this show, that there were giants. This literally did happen. It was not just mythology. This did occur. And people around the world that had no capacity for communicating with one another verified that it did happen. Now, what Steve was saying a moment ago, that's the most overlooked aspect of biblical prophecy. Not only did it happen once before, but according to Bible prophecy, it's going to happen again. And that is something that almost everybody everywhere misses. Most churches, most people attending a church will have never even heard this fact, that according to Bible prophecy, those gateways of the earth, they're going to open again in the Great Tribulation period, and giants are going to literally erupt up from out of the earth. For instance, according to Isaiah 13, which talks about the ultimate destruction of Babylon, which has not happened yet. But what does it say in Isaiah 13? It says this, I'm reading this from the Septuagint, because the ancient Hebrew scholars that translated the Hebrew into the Greek Septuagint understood the story better than most modern translators do. Here's what it says. It says, "The vision which Isaiah, son of Amos, saw against Babylon, lift up the standard on the mountain of the plain, exalt the voice to them, beckon with the hand, open the gates." Now notice that's plural, not just one gate. "Open the gates, ye rulers. I give command, and I bring them. Giants are coming to fulfill my wrath." And then you can go on and read the rest of that text. So,
Tom, are they going to come up onto the earth through the volcanoes?
Yeah, I have an answer for that, Rick. Absolutely. I cannot find any categories. Even human sacrifice from the Hawaiian Islands into the Indonesia, the South Pacific, they literally not only put it in their myths and legends, but they sacrifice humans, because in many cases, you know, they call them the fire beings. What's fascinating is in the end times, what was one of the keys that Jesus said that would be a sign of his second coming? That there would be massive earthquakes, or diverse earthquakes, or massive earthquakes, great earthquakes in diverse places. And so everything that Tom has been taught, or not taught, but, well, yeah, I guess you've been instructed by Dr. Mose and all those guys. Everything I know, it's always in the earth. They're coming up on the earth. Jesus said, men's hearts failing them for looking after those things coming up on the earth. And then you get the U.S. military and DARPA. You get all the secret societies and all the secret military scientific laboratories, and they want the DNA of these things. Rick, if they're talking about woolly mammoths and bringing them back, or saber-toothed tigers or dinosaurs, what do you think they will do with this? And for the record, most of the giants that I have talked to, you know, even the guys that, like the pilot, famous doctor in Russia, you know, when they talk about seeing the giants, they say one thing that stands out above everything else: they're remarkably preserved. And because they're of a heavenly, if you will, half-heavenly being, that even their brains emit. Now, understand, these things are in stasis. They're not awakened yet. But even their brains emit such a powerful, if you will, emanation, there's a good word, that a normal human can't even be within a specific vicinity. Now, when you hear that happened in Nepal, and by the way, Nepal means the mountain of the gods, and some people believe it's the translation from Nepal, N-A-P-H-A-L, which is a Hebrew word, and which is the root of Nephilim. Then go to Bhutan, which is in the same part of the Himalayas, a separate little kingdom, and that's called the Garden of the Gods. And so what's fascinating, Dr. Ernst Moldeshev, the most famous optical surgeon in the world, goes to Bhutan, goes to the Himalayas, and they take him into a cave, and he sees a giant. and stasis, in suspended animation. The Buddhist monks tell him, you cannot go beyond this line. Well, Multichev's a scientist, and he figured, well, there's got to be something more to this. And he said, as he even approached the line, he felt like his brain and his entire head was going to explode. Then I talked to a general who was in the White Mountains of Arizona and talks about, and also Dulce, New Mexico, and talked about a group of scientists that didn't take the warning seriously, and they call it a red line. It goes from yellow, orange to red, and you cannot go beyond that line. Now, they must have some way of offsetting those brain emanations, but basically he said, imagine, it was pretty disgusting, but he said, imagine a bunch of pimples popping simultaneously, and that's what happened to the scientists. In other words, they were all obliterated because they didn't believe it. So whether the giant, there, I believe, was alive, and we're talking about things that are coming upon the earth. Now is a great time for you to talk about your thing, because when you and I first met, Rick, you kind of shared that as an aside. I don't know that Tom's ever heard it, but it's critical. You've got three guys, Tom Horn, Steve Quayle, Rick Wiles on True News, and Rick had this, how many years ago did God show you your giant thing?
This is before I was saved, so I was about I was about 24 years old and radically unsaved. And, I didn't have any, I had never read the Bible. The only time I had ever been in church was with my grandparents as a child. At the time that this happened to me, I was about 24 years old and hard drinking party guy and had no religious inclinations at all. Although my wife Susan had started going to church and had succeeded in dragging me to church with her and forcing me to listen to preaching every Sunday. So anyhow, I was resisting all this stuff to the best of my ability. And I think this would have been sometime in early 1978. So I was asleep as Saturday night, Sunday morning, and I had this powerful, vivid dream. And as I tell it, I can relive it. I can see every frame like a movie. I can still see it today. I was in an underground city. It wasn't a cave. This was an underground city. It was clearly a man-made tunnel. And there was all that I was allowed to see was the highway. And it was illuminated by artificial light. And it was kind of like, almost like fog on the left and right, and I could see the glow of the artificial lighting in this underground structure. And it went as far into the earth as I could possibly see. So I'm standing there and I'm looking at this site. And from the right and the left side, soldiers started coming out of the darkness, and they were strapping on their boots. They were putting on the uniforms. They were putting on helmets. They were strapping on their gear. And clearly they were getting ready for battle. And there was a commander with his back facing me, and he was shouting out orders and commanding them to get in formation as quickly as possible. And I'm talking, there were thousands of soldiers, thousands. And so I'm watching this scene, and I thought, I got to get a closer look at this. So I walked up to them. And when I got up close enough, I realized they were not human. They had the body of a human being, but they had the head of an animal. And I'm staring at these soldiers, and they're ignoring me. But clearly they were getting ready for war. And so I walked up to the commander, and I tapped him on the shoulder. And I said, hey, what's going on here? And he whipped around, and we were almost nose to nose. And this very moment, I can still see his face. It was kind of a like a lion face. And I don't know, these creatures, all I can describe is part human, part locust, part lion. It was just a strange-looking creature. And so he looked at me with this stunned look, like he didn't say it, but the expression on his face said, "That's the dumbest question anybody's asked me." And he looked at me and he said, "Have you not read the book of the Revelation?" And the dream was over. I woke up and I was trembling in bed. I was sweating. I was trembling, absolutely shaken by what I had just seen and heard. And it was near sunrise. And my wife woke up and she said, "Hey, do you want to go to church with me today?" And I said, "Yes, I want to go to church." I didn't own a Bible. I had never read a Bible. I had never read the book of the Revelation. I had no idea what this was. But that's how the Lord, that was the thing that the Lord used to get me into church and get me saved. I really believe the Lord allowed me to see. He allowed me to see an army that does exist and that will come forth at a certain time for battle on the earth.
Well, what's interesting is I quoted earlier Isaiah 13. I only quoted verse 1 and 2, where the giants are coming up out of the earth. But read that all the way through. Read all of Isaiah 13 through verse 22. Where when he ends that quote about the giants coming up out of the bowels of the earth, he also says monsters are going to be there, devils are going to be there, and then he mentions satyrs. Now we're talking about entities that are part human, part animal, transgenic entities that are literally going to come up out of the surface of the earth. Of course, Revelation chapter 9, if you read that, when the mighty angel comes down with a key to the bottomless pit, he opens a gate to the earth. The gateway of the earth opens up, and what comes out? These locusts are all transgenics. They're all part one kind of an animal, another kind of an animal, part human, part beast. So so what you saw, you know, even before you were saved, what God allowed you to see was an image of the end times. Let me tell you something very quickly, and I won't take much time here. I told you that I talked to Dr. Don Mose. He talked about these gates of the earth that opened up in the, you know, in the four corners of the United States. Well, guess what? An excavation that is going on right now in the four corners of the United States. It's actually called the archaeology of, if somebody wants to Google this, the archaeology of San Canyon Pueblo, where they are excavating an area where the Anasazi Indians were wiped out so rapidly and so viciously that nothing like it was ever found before in American history. Anasazi Indians who were literally torn to shreds, where parts of their bones are discovered over a 200-mile radius, as if something tore them up so significantly, they then carried parts of these Anasazi with them for food, if you will, to eat as they're traveling. But that's not the only part of this story. And I'm going to be producing a documentary. I might be working with Steve on this. I still have to talk to him about it. But we're going to go and try to film what they found there, because you know what they found? They found giant Anasazi. Now remember, in early American history, you know, this whole idea, what's called the Smithsonian cover-up, where the Smithsonian sent people into all the mounds areas. They dug up all the giant bones. They tried to hide them because they want to hide this history from the world because it doesn't go along with Darwinian evolution and so on. But they're not going to be able to cover this up because this is being published. This is being done at the university level in Colorado, the archaeology of the San Canyon Pueblo excavation, where they are examining the bones of these Anasazi. Anasazi are really small people, American Indians that were about 5 feet tall. Well, guess what? They just uncovered two Anasazi Indians that are nearly 8, they're over 7 feet tall. Let me just be conservative and say they're over 7 feet tall, which would have been giant Anasazi, but that's not the only part that's important. The part that reflects what your vision saw, Rick, these Anasazi have palidactyly, they have 6 fingers, 6 toes, but not only that, not only are they giant, they also have distorted mandibles. They have the teeth of lions. Their heads are huge. And they not only have the teeth of lions, they have 2 rows of teeth, which totally goes to the history of the Nephilim. A full row of teeth in the front that are sharp like lion's teeth, teeth behind that that are also sharp like lion's teeth. And these are bones that have just been excavated in Colorado as part of the Anasazi digs at the archaeology of San Canyon Pueblo. We're going to try to get permission to go there and film these bones. But this, again, testifies to what you're talking about, that these mutations that came forth in the days of old are going to come forth again. And when they do, they have these very strange, anomalous, part human, part animal-like fixtures about them.
I think it's important, too, that, you know, what people don't understand is when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, they also found a thing called the Book of Giants. Mm-hmm. They found the Apocrypha. But here's 2 Esdras 5:8. There shall be confusion also in many places, and the fire shall be offset out again. And the wild beasts shall change their places, and minstrous women shall bring forth monsters. And you know, Rick, it's every day the London Daily Mail, which, you know, I wish they'd knock off the right side of their publication just because, you know, they're enamored with Hollywood. But the point is that we're talking about entities being born, even Cyclops. Cyclops are coming back into the norm and into the realm of where they were never spoken of except in mythology and legend. And you know, one thing I want to say, when I've spent 40-some years of my life on this, on True Legends, that's actually a book, it's also a DVD, and Genesis 6 Giants, as Tom will tell you, if people want to get a biblical background, they need to have stuff that's sourced. And the book that I've written, I'm not trying to push my book, but I'm just saying this. I can't answer every question I get in emails about giants. So I tell people, please, do your homework. Tom Horn and I have done our homework. And it's like you, Rick. You can go out and research the internet and get every single source article that you're using to illustrate, you know, what the Lord has placed on your heart. And people say, I don't believe it. Well, any honest person who's looking for answers, I want to say this, the Word of God is the foundation for everything Rick does, everything that Tom does, and everything that I do. But it's within the heart of a king to search out a matter. And even the old statement by Sir Isaac Newton, that at time of the end, basically God would... can you quote that in its entirety, Tom?
Which one?
At the time of the end, God would raise up men who are skilled in the scripture amongst much clamor.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, that's good enough. It basically means this. Clamorous noises are always designed to basically drown out the truth. And it's fascinating. I don't know if you guys have ever had this done, but I've literally talked about this stuff, and I've had people put their fingers in their ears and start going, la, 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 okay? And I don't know if you've ever seen that, because one guy just turned to me after doing it and said, I can't stand to hear this. I can't stand to hear this. Well, the bottom line is that there are people that just cannot accept this stuff. Yet this stuff is what every special forces group in the world, doesn't matter if it's China, doesn't matter Russia, United States, Israeli, everybody's after the ancient technology and the understanding of the ancient genetics. What do we have? We have the God of Anubis appearing in New York a couple years ago, the giant statue, black body, you know, upper torso, gold Egyptian headrest, and lo and behold, New York's one of the first places that they want to build one of the archways or temples of Baal. Now, that should be a warning to everybody that this no longer, one thing Obama did say that I would say probably the only first or second time he ever told the truth, America is no longer a Christian nation, and the Christians are trying to get a grip or a grasp on what's going on, and they're missing it because they don't understand, and I'll make this clear, Genesis 6, Numbers 13, 33, and 33 other verses in the Old Testament, nor do they pay attention to the words of Jesus when he's talking about men's hearts failing them. And again, 1 John 3:8 states, "For this purpose was the Son of God manifested, that he might destroy the works of the evil one." And the works of the evil one are portrayed in Hollywood. They're getting more gruesome. They're getting more disgusting on television. And oh, by the way, the last, I think, one of the scenes in the new Star Wars, somebody sent it to me, a clip, it shows a giant sitting on his throne talking, in other words, the bad guy is a giant. Wow. So when we're talking about giants, we're not talking about Shrek. We're not talking about, fairy tale portrayals. We're talking about entities. We're talking about those who had supernatural strength. We're talking about the idea that the greatest underground citadels and the great monuments of our day, the wonders of the world, were all built by these guys who have supernatural intelligence. It's not Neanderthals as the evolutionary chain. They were just proven wrong again. The Neanderthals and human genome share no common genetic makeup.
Well, and bottom line is, what Steve is talking about is biblical. This is the point that I want to keep trying to make, is that anybody who would listen to what we're talking about right now that might want to challenge this biblically simply does not understand the Old Testament or New Testament revelation. First of all, number one, the earth is a holding tank. Jesus clarified that in Luke 16, talking about Abram's bosom, a rich man, a poor man, go down into the earth itself. Jesus said, by the way, he tells his disciples about the story of Jonah, and he says, as Jonah was in the belly of the earth for 3 days and three nights, so shall also be the Son of Man. But read the story of Jonah. What does it say in Jonah chapter 2? Jonah swallowed by a great fish. Some people think that was a grouper, not a whale, just a giant fish. But he goes down, and what does it say? He goes down into the bottom of the sea. Read that in the Hebrew. It's so extraordinary because it explains there how he goes to a city, to an area. A city is what the King James says, but an area called Baravak. And the term Baravak means a city of gates, and he goes through a gate. Now, I could talk about this so much. As above, so below. The surface of the sea is meant to reflect what is above, so is below. You can find this in Washington, D.C., with the mirror-reflecting pools. If the average Christian out there doesn't even know what I'm alluding to, believe me, the occultist definitely does. What is above is also below. So below the sea, he goes down into Baravak, and he goes through these gates, a city of gates. That's what it means. And where does he go? He winds up in Sheol, Hades. Well, Jesus says, as Jonah was in the belly of the earth 3 days, three nights, so shall also be the Son of Man. He goes down into Sheol, Hades, and as I said earlier, he preaches to the spirits that are in prison, and he comes up from out of the underworld. And it isn't just the story of Jonah. It isn't just Luke 16, Revelation 9, angels bound beneath the surface of the earth in Euphrates. Job 26:5 describes the Rapha, which Steve was referring to earlier, the dead offspring of the giants. Describes them down there, by the way, squirming beneath the surface of the earth in full battle dress, awaiting the moment Isaiah 13 moment is going to happen. 2 Peter 2:6, Jude 6, quoting the book of Enoch, the woman of Endor in 1 Samuel 28. So these are all references that describe for us how dynamic the earth itself is, and that there are gateways of the earth, and under extraordinary circumstances, things can come up from out of the earth. Now, the other thing that we kind of went past very quickly, we started this program, Rick, and you quoted from Deuteronomy 3, talking about Og, the king of Bashan. There's stuff here that the average Christian has never heard in their life that is so extraordinary that without knowing it, you can't even appreciate the conversation we're having right now. Why am I saying that? The bed. This is what Deuteronomy says, is not the bed still viewed as? That bed is measured in cubits. Now, cubits have a couple of different ways of measuring them in terms of our own understanding of inches. The really conservative translation of the measurements of the bed of Og would make it 13 feet long and I think 5 or 6 feet wide. I can't quite remember. The other way of looking at cubits, help me here, Steve, I think maybe 18 feet tall. But very tall, no matter what, 13 to 18 feet tall, no matter how you translate a cubit. Now, but why am I bringing this up? Because an identical bed was found when, what's his name, you know, there in Iraq, the guy we captured, Saddam Hussein, when he was excavating all of the area around the Tower of Babel and was going to make himself the new Nebuchadnezzar and all of his plans, there was a bed that was excavated, and it is exactly the same measurement down to the millimeter of the bed that is described with King Og. Now, why is this important? Because additional information was ascertained, and the people that excavated that bed say that bed was used for ritual sexual magic. For the purposes of what? For the purposes of bringing up the Rafa out of the underworld and incarnating them in bodies of flesh. Now, this is deep, very deep, occultic magic that is only still practiced today by above 33-degree Freemasons in Washington, D.C., and places like that for the purposes of trying to bring up the spirit of Osiris from the underworld. But this bed that was found at the Tower of Babel, the magic that went on there is actually verified by God himself in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 13. And here's what it says there. Ezekiel 13. Now, by the way, I'm going over this very quickly. I've studied this at the academic level. And if you don't want to take my word for it, because we won't have time in a program like this to go into all the bits and pieces of this, but at the academic level, here's what's being described. Ezekiel 13 says this, and I'm just going to read it in King James because that's what most people read. Thus saith the Lord God, woe to the women that sew pillows. Now, this term, sew pillows, is, and Steve and I have done shows, whole shows on this in the past, but this is the Hebrew term kasetat, which means magic bands. Now, these were magic bands, brass bands, that were wrapped around the heads and also the wrists of the giants. These have been found in the past, by the way, on giants that have been excavated, even some of the ones with the red hair that were found here in the United States. They had these magic brass bands. But God is talking about it here in the book of Revelation, in the book of Ezekiel. Look what he says. Thus saith the Lord God, woe to the women that make these kasetah, these magic bands that are connected to magic beds and that make kerchiefs upon the head of every statue. Now again, this is talking about magic devices for giants, the headbands, if you will. But look what he says, to hunt souls. Will ye hunt the souls of my people, and will ye save the souls of alive that come unto you? Will you, look what it says, slay the souls that should not die, and save the souls alive that should not live? Wherefore, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against your kasetah, your magic bands, connected to magic beds, wherewith you hunt souls of giants to possess men, to make them fly. By the way, anybody can look up this term here, to make them fly, in the Strong's. It literally says, to bud up from out of the earth, as in reanimated Rapha, in the place of the human soul. And I will tear them from your arms, God says, and I will let those souls go, even the souls that you hunt to make them fly. Anyway, bottom line, there are two words here in the text, and anybody that's serious about wanting to study this subject matter, the Hebrew scholars say these are connected to ancient magic that was used by those who were in league with the giants, Kasetata Mespebat, the magic brass bands and the magic headbands, the purpose of which was what? To literally cause an individual bound to this magic bed at in Og's bed, but also bound to this magic bed at the Tower of Babel, to make their soul die so that the soul of the underworld, Raphaim, the dead Nephilim giant, could be reanimated within this individual. There are scholars who even believe that that might be how the giants reappeared after the Great Flood. But what am I saying? I'm saying that there's a whole lot more I could say, but that there was deep occultism involved for the purposes of bringing up from out of the underworld the reanimation of these dead Nephilim giants. And so whether it's Steve Quayle talking about the return of the giants, whether it is Rick Wiles talking about his vision, whether it's Tom Horn saying this is the most overlooked aspect of end times biblical prophecy, there are absolutely portions in Scripture that the average church individual is not hearing one word about and probably never will, that has to do with probably the most momentous time that is in the very near future, in which the gates of the earth are going to open and reanimated Nephilim are going to return and play a role in end times biblical prophecy.
Tom, Steve, one reason that I believe it's vitally important that we study and understand this topic of giants is it's found in the 14th chapter of the Revelation of Jesus Christ. And John saw three angels. This is the last days. This is talking about the last days. He saw three angels encircling the earth, and the first one said, "Fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters." A second angel cried, "Babylon has fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." The third angel cried out with a loud voice, "If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb." It's my view that if you don't understand this subject of fallen angels and the Nephilim, then you're not going to understand what happened at creation, the fall of man, the appearance of Jesus Christ. You're not going to understand what happened at Calvary. You're not going to understand what happened when Jesus descended into hell. You're not going to understand his victory over hell and the grave, and you're not going to understand the second coming. I think it's vital that Christians in this hour understand this subject.
Well, and let me speak to this, Rick. What's fascinating is you and I are on, Tom Horn, you know, out of the Vatican Library, you saw this too, didn't you, Tom? The giant King Og speaks. For a long time, there's been an argument over where are all the writings of the giants? In other words, where are the writings of the Rephaim? And I don't know if you guys know this, but I think it was around the 6th of April, supposedly a Vatican document was released. Now, look at the timing. By the way, I think it was 18 feet tall. The reason I say that is because of, you know, the royal cubit and three sixes. But here's what's remarkable. God is revealing everything that's been hidden. Jesus said there's nothing that's been hidden that won't be made known. And what's fascinating to me is the Vatican releases, or somebody releases from the Vatican, the only known writing outside the Book of Enoch and some of the apocryphal books, but actually written in his hand. And it starts out, okay, the chapter 7, which begins with the taunts from King Og to Israel. Well, that's what obviously Goliath did to David. And what's interesting, he calls normal humans, I'm talking King Og now, he calls them, and this shows you the contempt these guys have for humanity, he calls them ants buried in fecal matter, okay? And he said that basically the book 2 talks about there are multiple references to my brethren which seem to refer to the antediluvian Nephilim. And he says this, and I'm going to read this because nobody's talking about this. I guess we are today. Are the tales of my exploits not traveling to you, O fecal worm of Israel, of my power-renowned fields of my pre-Adamic watcher, Nephilim brother, how we turned our wrath, mercy a foreigner, the world stood? He's saying this, we controlled the world. We dominated you, obviously you can call them ants, dipped in something not nice. But the point is, that what's the chance of that, Rick? I don't believe it's a chance. I believe as CERN, and I want to get back to CERN, as CERN kicks into full power, the corollary in the world of physics, in the heavens, and the earth, and under the earth, all these revelations are coming to a focal point or nexus. So the giant King Og speaks, and notice, Tom, it was either stolen or released from the Vatican Library.
By the way, Steve, I want to set the record straight here. According to Newser.com, this is their headline, CERN officially distances itself from Satan.
That's funny because, they're staying in their one part of the kingdom of Satan. They're in the right-hand corner, and they're saying all the bad guys are in the left-hand corner, and they're all in the same room.
You know how weird things are when a science organization has to officially say they're not connected to Lucifer?
The one part about this that we haven't started to talk about and won't be able to is all the ancient seers who predicted when the gates of the earth would open, but not just the gates of the earth would open, the king of the Nephilim, what the New Testament calls the Antichrist, would rise up out of that pit that Revelation 9 says is going to open. And these are almost all occultic, but not all occultic. Some of them are Christian, actually, prognosticators. For hundreds of years, for thousands of years, all saw the year 2016 as that moment when the gates of the earth would open and the king of the Nephilim and the gates of the earth would open. And, of course, I wrote an entire book on it, Zenith 2016, asking why in the world were all these cultures, some of them are even occultic cultures like the Mayans, the Cherokees, the Zohar, why were they all looking forward to this moment in time saying 2016, that'll be the year the gate will open?
Do you think it's connected to CERN?
Well, it could, certainly could possibly be. And look, CERN, here's, I've often noticed about organizations that should be watched, that when they get really, really quiet, might be the most important moment in time. Because remember, before they discovered the so-called Higgs boson that Steve mentioned earlier, they got really quiet for like 2 or 3 months. Why? Well, because it's in peer review. It's a moment where they think they might have found something, they've submitted it to scientists, and now it's in review. And they're trying to determine, can we go public? Can we say something? And not long ago, they made this, this statement that they were looking for a doorway to another world. They were looking for evidence of a parallel universe using gravitons, without going into all the detail, how they film, the collision of these particles. They all break apart, and they're looking at different particles. But their theory is that gravitons, the theoretical particle on which gravity is made, that these might be a weak particle, not looped by string theory, that theory, or anything else, that these might somehow have the ability to escape into a parallel universe. And so they conducted the most powerful experiments to date, colliding particles at levels they have never done before, and they've got the four different high-tech cameras that are part of the whole, apparatus there that are filming these particles colliding at these tremendous speeds. They're all breaking apart. And their hope was they were going to be able to film gravitons escaping. Well, all we know is that they did capture film, and gravitons were literally disappearing. Now, into what? They haven't said. And I think they're holding their moment. They're not saying anything yet because they want to make sure that what they think they have discovered can be confirmed by, you know, some of the elite particle physicists. But I think we're standing on the precipice of a moment in time in which they're going to say, we have discovered a parallel universe. So this is a gateway, a doorway. You know, Sergio Bertolucci, who is the head of the, you know, the particle physicist there at CERN, has already said, you know, we hope to open a doorway, a gateway, and we hope to send something through it, or maybe something will come back through it. You can Google all that and read it. So that's what they're looking for. And my personal suspicion is they think they have found a doorway into another reality. Now, it could be, you know, if I wanted to let my mind, you know, run, my thoughts run away with me here, it could be they found something much more than that. What do I mean by that? Meaning that something was sent back through the opening, essentially a message saying, yes, we are here. That's what they're hoping will happen. Has that happened? We won't know for a while. But the fact that they said, we're going to conduct the most powerful experiments in history, and we're looking for a door, and then they went silent. To me, their silence speaks louder than words. Their silence says they think they have found something, and they're not yet ready to go public with what they think they have found. But definitely, they are looking for a doorway into another reality.
Well, I'm going to finish this interview with this recent news article. It's came out on April 7th, and this was published by CNN. John Podesta, the chairman of the Hillary Clinton for President campaign, was interviewed on CNN, and he said, the American people can handle the truth about UFOs. And basically what he promised, guys, is that if Hillary Clinton is elected president, she's going to come clean and tell the American people what the U.S. government knows about UFOs and extraterrestrials. Now, think about this. A campaign promise of the front runner for the Democratic Party nomination. One of her campaign promises is to reveal the truth about ETs and UFOs. If that isn't weird enough, I don't know what else would top that list. That's how bizarre this world has become. My guest today, Dr. Tom Horn, he's the founder and co-host of Skywatch TV, and Steve Quayle, longtime radio commentator, also the author of numerous books, including Genesis Six Giants. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here on True News today.
Thank you, Rick.